Today's podcast session is supported by Upheal. So if you ask a therapist who's doing clinical work what the bane of their existence is, usually progress notes are in the top 1 to 2. I'm not naming any names, but when I was doing clinical work, I remember I had several colleagues who would get so backed up on clinical notes, so they would end up spending their nights and weekends trying just to catch up. Honestly, who wants to do that? And this is where Upheal comes in. Upheal is AI-powered case notes. Now, I know for many of us, when we hear the word AI, there's like a natural skepticism. And honestly, I had that skepticism as well until I got to meet with the Upheal team and learn about some of the many ways that they are doing this in a way that is HIPAA compliant and also doesn't sell data to anyone and also protects our clients as well. You can learn more about Upheal and the awesome work that they're doing in the world by going to sellingthecouch.com/Upheal. And Upheal is spelled U-P and then H-E-A-L, all one word. And at checkout, be sure to enter the promo code COUCH25, C-O-U-C-H, and the number 25 to get 25% off your Upheal plan for the first 2 months. Man, I cannot believe we are at 60 sessions already. I just feel like it was yesterday when I had session one and I was all awkward and nervous and saying, hey guys, welcome to Selling the Couch. Anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. Today's episode is actually a topic we have not talked about very much, actually I don't think at all, which is the topic of insurance, and more specifically, how do you transfer your paneling from a group to a solo practice? In other words, if you are working for a group private practice and you're credentialed with them and you want to go into solo private practice, how do you go about that whole process? My guest today is Danielle Kepler. Danielle is a licensed clinical professional counselor out in Chicago, and she actually made this transition this past April and has done it very successfully. And she has actually created a full-time practice that she's completely full and she accepts insurance. Danielle went through this whole process of switching all of her credentialing over, and I knew that she had done this, and I had reached out, and she was just so gracious to come on and share this whole process and what it's been like for her. So in today's session, we're going to cover a number of things. We're going to talk about some of the things that she recommends to make that transition from insurance paneling for your group to a solo practice easier. And then we're going to talk about, let's say that you actually want to start a private practice that's at least partially insurance-based. What are the key things that you need to think about, and what are the key pieces of information that you need to gather? And then how do you figure out which providers you want to be credentialed with? How do you figure out which ones are accepting new clinicians? How do you address it, or how do you go about it if many of these panels say that they're no longer accepting clinicians? This session is action-packed, full of really great information, so we'll get right to it. Here is my conversation with Danielle Kepler from DKTherapy.com. Hey, Danielle, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. It's great to be here.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. I feel like this topic is very important. It intimidates a lot of clinicians.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know for me, we were talking about this like right before. I was in a group private practice, was credentialed through them, and the thought of like going into my own private practice and trying to figure out this whole insurance thing, like I didn't even know where to get started.
Right. It's very daunting for lots of therapists, and it was for myself as well.
And it's good. Like, it's good that you're saying that, because I feel like many people struggle with it. It's very normal to feel overwhelmed, because likely the majority of us had to like never deal with insurance, at least on that level.
Right. And when you're starting out, you have all your business pieces, you have your note system, you have your office and everything. And then you're like, oh my goodness, what about the insurance nightmare? Mm-hmm. And then you, it's very daunting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the first places that I wanted to start with is, what are three things that you recommend to make transferring from your insurance paneling, like from your group private practice to like a solo group, easier?
So what I first did when after I had left my group is really think about, okay, what insurance panels were my clients actually using at the group? So I made a whole list of all of the insurances that I know that my clients were using. Mm-hmm. So I just made this long list of pretty much the major insurance companies out there, you know, Blue Cross, Cigna, Aetna, and all of that. So I made this long, long list. And the first step I took was I actually went on all their provider directories and I looked up myself. I was, in fact, on the provider directory, which means I was credentialed in some way or form with that insurance company.
Right.
So I kind of fact-checked.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I'm going to ask you a lot of, like, dumb questions in this, but did you actually check, like, your own credential? Did you go on, then, like, each insurance website?
So there are some exceptions to this, but most of all, each insurance company has like a public provider directory where the member of the insurance company, the client, can go on and search for a provider, the like doc find type of stuff, like look for a doctor, look for a clinician type of thing. So I would go in there and I would put my group practice zip code and search for my name and see what came up.
So that gave you an idea of, one, if you were credentialed with them, but then also like how many other providers were credentialed in that zip code?
Right. Well, when I would search just for my name, it would only pull up me. So it would pull up Danielle Kepler and it would pull up the group practice address.
Got it. Okay. So then that's like the first step. And what else?
Yeah, that was my first step. And then what I did then was to Google again the insurance company, the name of the insurance company, and then provider to look under and get the information as far as the provider relations phone number or email that I would have to contact. Because I really didn't know anything as far as who I should be able to contact to figure all this stuff out.
Like an example would be like Blue Cross provider contact information or something like that?
Right. Blue Cross Blue Shield provider. And then Google would just pull up, hopefully, like the provider website for that company. And you would have most likely find the contact information of the insurance company that way.
Okay. And then once you did that, what did you do?
So I kept a nice Google document file of all of this. That was really my go-to thing, is to keep a whole list of, okay, this is Blue Cross, here's the contact information. I kept a whole like tally of all my steps and all the email addresses that I would need also for future reference too.
Yeah, I love how organized you are, because I feel like you have to be.
You have to be, really, to keep track of all this stuff. But the next step I did was I sort of made a script for myself as far as what I was going to either say when I called the provider relations or write in an email. And that script basically said, hi, my name is so-and-so, or I think I'm currently credentialed under my group practice. I listed the group practice name and I said, here's the group practice tax ID number. If I am in fact credentialed under that group, what do I have to do to go independently or to go to do my solo practice? And so that was the big question that I asked. And I got lots of emails back either, you know, 2 weeks later, a month later, maybe about, okay, you're actually credentialed under your group. And here's what you would have to do to switch your credentialing over.
That's actually really helpful. So even taking a step back, you know, that Google Doc that you created. So it sounds like you put the name of the insurance company, their contact email.
Right.
Other things that you like put on that?
The name of the insurance company, the contact email of provider relations. Also, if the insurance company, some of them have your own little liaison between you and the insurance company. Like I know in Illinois, Blue Cross Blue Shield has like a provider relations go-to person based on your county. So I put down that person's information as well, because they were going to be my first point of contact.
Okay. How did you figure out, like, was that something that was listed on that provider?
Right. That was listed on the provider website.
So that's kind of your person that you're going to be communicating with as you're shifting.
With Blue Cross in particular, I emailed that person and I said just that, like, here's my group tax ID number. What do I need to do to switch to a solo practice? And she emailed me back.
You got the group tax ID just on that website as well, or did you ask the group?
I just knew that from being at the group practice. It's on a lot of, basically all of the billing information, things like that.
Right. And then at that point, you got that information, you had the script ready to go. And you sometimes, it sounds like a lot of times you emailed. Other times, did you call them and say the script?
Yes, I would call them and say the script, say, here's my group tax ID number. And I also would also mention my individual NPI number, too. So they would look me up under the tax ID and they would see my name. And then they would also say, okay, and that's the NPI number of her.
Yeah, so just to make sure we're all on the same page, quickly explain the NPI number, National Provider
Identification.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I believe. So that's NPI number is the number that each provider gets assigned to sort of tell the insurance company that that's their identity. At least that's my sort of understanding.
Yeah, that's the way that I understand it. It's like almost like a social security number, but
right,
for insurance.
Right. And that NPI number, there's two different types. There's a type one, which is an individual provider, and then there's a type two, which is a group. Mm-hmm. So my old group had their group type two NPI, but I was just using my type one. And that type one NPI, that goes with you no matter where you go. That's like your social security number, exactly.
Right.
So you keep the same NPI regardless of your group or solo practice.
Okay, that's helpful to know. How do you get an NPI number?
An NPI registry that you go online and you register for it.
Okay. And I did this, I think it was free, but is that correct?
Yes, it's free. Okay. Yes. There's some scammer sites out there that say you need to pay for it, I'm sure, but it's free.
Okay. I'll see if I can link to the NPI, the main website.
And then you also need your own individual tax ID, too, which is you could get from the IRS website.
Okay. Sounds good. And then is there anything else, like, in terms of numbers or anything like that you need?
I don't believe so. Those are the two main numbers as far as insurance.
Okay. Sounds good. And then just shifting a little bit, you know, you said you created this, like, massive list of the insurances that clients were on. How did you figure out which providers that you wanted to be credentialed with?
So I sort of looked at insurance like this. I was completely new to my practice. I knew being on insurance panels would get me referrals and get me people in the door quickly. So I looked at it as if I was credentialed under my group practice with it, I would like to be credentialed under my solo practice. So I was not really discriminating against anything. I said, okay, I just wanted every insurance company that I'm credentialed with under my group, I would like to be credentialed with under my solo practice.
Okay. So you essentially wanted to transfer every one of them over.
Right. And then I would be a little more choosy once everything was transferred over.
In terms of whether you wanted to continue with them or accept clients?
Right. I am very pro-insurance, so I'd rather be on a panel and then have the opportunity to potentially see a client that takes that insurance. Mm. So I don't think I'm going to be unpaneling myself anytime soon from insurance companies.
This, again, might be a really silly question. So I know sometimes, like in certain areas, like insurances just don't accept new clinicians into the existing directory.
Right.
So is that like, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, if you're already credentialed with your practice, does that mean you're already kind of in the system? Or?
So that was definitely a hurdle that I had to overcome in a way. Mm-hmm. A lot of insurance companies are closed in my area to new providers, but I had to sort of give them a little pushback and advocate for myself and say, hey, I'm not a new provider. I'm actually credentialed under a group. Mm. So I wouldn't actually... If you think of it like a big background check, that's why the whole process takes so long. They have to do this gigantic background check on you. So it's almost like, hey, I passed the background check. I am a credentialed provider. I just want to switch my information over. So a lot of insurance companies, they said, oh, you need to basically start from the ground up again because they must have misunderstood me when I said, oh, they thought I was a new provider, but I actually wasn't a new provider.
Oh my gosh, it just sounds
if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think one thing I'm taking away is like, this is definitely a process that requires patience.
It definitely does. And a little bit of persistence. I mean, there was definitely insurance companies that they said, oh, you need to start from the ground up. And then a few months later, they gave me a rejection letter that says there's too many providers in my area.
Oh, wow.
But I would call them and say, I'm not a new provider. I'm already credentialed. Like, and here's my information. And the credentialing company, the credentialing department would say, oh, that's right. You are credentialed. So this isn't our problem. And I would get tossed around a lot. So, but it was all just me changing my information. not getting re-credentialed. So I'm not adding a provider to their network since I'm already a provider.
Right, and you're already in their
right.
system.
I'm already in the club. I've already learned the handshake. And I just need to switch my club chapter pretty much.
Right, right. No, it's a great, great image. Uh-huh. So how, whenever you got that rejection letter, who did you contact to get like that, to like, you know, say, hey, I know that I got rejected, but I'm actually, like, who did you contact to do that?
I contacted provider relations and said, I got this letter, but I'm actually already in network. And I think that was key. I'm already an in-network provider, and I'm just looking to switch my tax ID and my office location.
And then at that point, you just went from there.
Mm-hmm. And then they would say, oh, I'm so sorry. Let me talk to my supervisor.
My gosh. Well,
yeah. It was a big to-do. But a lot of times, it wasn't that difficult.
And then I think the key is just to be persistent with
mm-hmm.
it. And that was
right.
actually one of the questions that I had, because a couple of folks mentioned this. You have this awesome Facebook community for insurance billing that I highly recommend checking out. Two folks mentioned this, is that they've submitted stuff, but then they're just like waiting and waiting. So how did you stay on top of everything like during that waiting process? And at this point, like, it sounds like you're managing like multiple insurances. You're getting
uh-huh.
approved by some, rejected by some, waiting with some.
Right. I actually didn't get rejected by any person, but so that, I think that log is really a key piece. Every time I would email or call an insurance company, I would make a note of it. Say, on January 2nd, I made this phone call and I talked to this person and they told me this information. So really keeping tabs on what the insurance company tells you is really important for that. And it just also helped me with when I started to get discouraged and frustrated, I would say, okay, would look at my log and say, all right, I am actually making progress because I'm making these phone calls.
Mm. I hope this doesn't sound like a dorky question, but like on your Excel document, did you like make different tabs or was it like just all one?
In hindsight, I should have actually done that. It's one gigantic Google like Word document type of thing that just has the insurance company in bolded letters and then all the contact information and then my like log. So the thing's probably like 14 pages now. Mm. So what I do is I just navigate it. I'll just go to find and then put in the insurance company and then find the log.
Oh.
It's pretty disorganized right now.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that when you first started, right? Like you didn't intend it to, it to get so complicated. But no, I was just wondering about that.
But I think that was crucial as far as me keeping track of my progress and what the insurance company told me, because then I could use that as some pull. Oh, I called last week and they told me this, and you said you would have it done in 10 days and it's not done.
Right.
And that kind of stuff.
Yeah. What was the shortest time that you got like switched over? What was like the average time, and then what's the longest that you've had? And you don't have to go into like specific providers, but just in general.
Well, one insurance company, all I had to do was sign a new contract under my new tax ID, and that took a month, and I was able to backdate all my billing from that. So
oh,
I was
nice.
Able to bill for all those that entire month, which was amazing. I was very happy when that happened.
Yeah, that's really nice.
I was like, okay, this is not going to be that difficult. But then there were the companies, like I was mentioning before, that had initially rejected me, saying I was a new provider and they're not accepting new providers. Those are the ones that I really had to make a lot of phone calls and advocate for myself. And they took probably 5 months or so.
Okay.
But all of this would have taken more time had I been a completely new provider and needing to go through the whole credentialing process again.
Yeah. So it sounds like we're talking a lot about like, and I think this is a lot of folks that are already in a group practice and wanting to go solo. So it sounds like it's a similar process, but how you start out at the beginning looks a little different if you're just not in an existing practice at all and just wanting to start.
Yes. When you're just starting out with insurance companies and you're not paneled at all, it's a different process where you need to start with the CAQH database, which is a whole kind of online database that keeps all of your information for the insurance companies. That's where you would need to start out initially and fill out all that information and then go to the insurance companies one by one and request applications. And then you would need to wait on them for the whole credentialing process. And you may or may not get in on the panel.
Yeah, depending on.
It's a little different, yeah.
So it sounds like it's a little easier if you're in a group practice and trying to make that transition.
I would say it's a lot easier once you're on the panel. It's a little bit of a different process, but you have already passed the background check, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's a little easier, less of a wait.
Right. And it sounds like it seems like having a group practice that seems to have more weight with providers.
I think so, actually, because with it, I didn't do any of the credentialing with my group practice, but it seems like you would basically add the clinician under that same tax ID. So you'd basically like add them to your roster and they would maybe get added more easily rather than a solo practice. But the clinician would still have to go through the same credentialing process.
Right.
So it might be a little quicker, but you'd still have to go through the background check process.
And do all that. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Danielle, I feel like this was just a lot of action-packed information, really practical information. I'm just grateful that like you've gone through this process and that you're just willing to share it, because I know this is such an intimidating process for so many people.
I'm glad to help.
Yeah. You know, the last question that I just had was, you know, you've helped lots of clinicians, you've offered advice, you do some awesome stuff. What are like the top, even like the top 2 to 3 like mistakes that you notice just in general when as clinicians go through this process of transferring insurance?
I would say the first mistake that I made was to not give a little pushback with the insurance company. I initially, when I got that letter that I was rejected, I thought, okay, this is the end. I'm not going to be with that panel. But since I was already credentialed in there, I didn't really realize until I did it myself that, oh, it's a little different. I'm not a new provider. So that was kind of the first, I was like, all right, I give up. But just to sort of piggyback on that answer, I would say to not get discouraged, that eventually it will happen.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true, because I think you're right. Like, I think most of us think, you know, like we get a rejection letter, okay, that's the end.
Right, right.
And it's a different kind of ball game in this.
Right. And that insurance companies really, contrary to probably popular belief, like they do want to make their providers happy. They do are willing to work with you. And especially when you're already credentialed and everything and you're already in network, that you have a lot more clout than you realize.
And it's really, and sounds like just one of the places to really go through is that provider relations, each insurance company.
Yes.
Daniel, thank you again. This was super helpful. What are some ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Well, you can get in touch with me either by my email or phone, and all that information can be found on my website. And it's, the shorthand is www.dkthetherapy.com.
I will be sure to link to it. Take good care, okay?
All right, thank you.
Hey, what's up? Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Danielle. I know that was a lot of information, a lot of very technical information. So I put all of that information on the show notes page, which you can find at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 60. So really the two biggest things that I was taking away, actually probably the biggest thing, was that the importance of really setting a good foundation and the importance of being really intentional in planning out this process of making that transition from a group practice to a solo practice. It's something that you can't just decide, hey, I'm just going to get started as soon as like I leave my group practice. It really has to be something that you start several times before. And I do actually have one more insight, which is, you know, I was just thinking that a lot of times that we get this rejection letter from an insurance company or something like that saying in terms of being paneled. And I've gotten that before and I've just stopped. Like, I was like, oh, that's the law of the land. But hearing Danielle talk about it, and that's an opportunity for conversation. And there are some ways that you can be empowered and take action, even if you get a letter like that. That was just very encouraging for me to hear. Danielle actually created a Facebook group for insurance billing and credentialing. If you just go into Facebook and you just search for insurance billing and credentialing, it should pop up. Or if you're on a desktop and you log into Facebook, the group should pop up on the right-hand side. I'll also put that group link in the show notes. So if you are planning on being on insurance, at least partially or even fully, this is a really good group to learn about what's working, what's not working, and all of those things. Again, show notes to today's episode are at sellingthecouch.com/session60. Just transitioning a little bit, the podcasting workshops I've been doing have been super helpful. We've had really good attendance at the first several ones of the year, so I'm continuing to do them. I've got two of them coming up here in the next month, and if you're listening to this way down the line, I've likely got them also still going. You can find more information about that at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. Have a great week, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.